Everybody, welcome to the first episode of 2022 for Back to School with Maz Jobrani. Today we have Arye Kovler. He is a political commentator. He's got a newsletter called The Hat Tip. This guy is an expert on January 6th. He's been following January 6th. So he's going to talk to us, first of all, about the January 6th insurrection and attack on the Capitol. Secondly, he's going to tell us how a lot of our laws in America are outdated, like to the point where they're good for when people used to ride around on horses. And lastly, he's going to finally crack and tell us what Donald Trump meant that one time when he tweeted the word covefe. That and more right now on Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Maz Jobrani.
Hey.
Jobrani Maz. Oh, Maz Jobrani.
Hey, Jobrani.
Mazzy, Mazzy. Oh, Maz, 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 Maz.
Hey.
I got a podcast. Oh.
Back to school. Yeah.
Hey, guys. Welcome. I'm Maz Jobrani. I am your host. This is my sidekick, Tehran. How are you, T?
I am here. 2022. Woo.
2022, buddy. I got the COVID over the holidays. It's been like the flu because I'm triple vaxxed. I've been resting. How
did
you
die? But did you die? That's
I did
the
not
point.
Die.
But you didn't die.
The
so the vaccine kind of worked.
The vaccine didn't kill me. So when I was at home watching television on MSNBC, I saw Arye Kovler. He is a political commentator who... He was one of the people who tweeted that there was going to be violence at the Capitol on January 6th, about a month before it even happened, or a few weeks before it happened. And I thought this guy's a great guy to talk to because I am obsessed with January 6th, and I'm obsessed with how unobsessed other people are, or many people are, with January 6th. Because really, they almost took over the country. People don't really have come to terms with how close Donald Trump came to having a fascist dictatorship in America.
I mean, they didn't almost take over the Capitol, but the fact that they even tried in the United States of America is a much bigger deal. I think the implications and the slippery slope there, and the fact that people are so willing to forgive them so quickly because it simply aligns with their views. That's the only reason. They didn't really do anything. They just stormed the Capitol building.
Yeah.
Well,
a lot of people make that excuse to go, well, what about the protesters, Black Lives Matter?
A Capitol building and a Target somewhere in Van Nuys. There's a huge difference here, okay?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and also, that's the thing, though, when you say they didn't almost take over the country, the Capitol, they almost did, and I'll tell you why. There's a lot of articles that are coming out about what the plans were. You know, one of the plans, we talk about this in this episode, but one of the plans was... for the National Guard, Trump would have called the National Guard and the National Guard would have shown up. And then because there was violence going on, they would have squashed that violence. But in the process, Trump would have said, look, this is getting out of control. I'm taking over. It's going to be martial law. That's what Mike Flynn, one of his advisors, was saying. You can do martial law and the Insurrection Act, which meant, okay, we're under a state of emergency. So I'm gonna call the shots right now. There's no one else can say anything. And that would have given him time to go back and do whatever shenanigans needed to be done to claim that there was, fraud in some state or whatever and flip that state or flip the states that needed to be flipped in order to then, win the presidency again illegitimately. And it's, General Milley, who was the top general at the time, famously said that he thought that was going to be Trump's Reichstag moment, which is a reference to Germany when...
1933.
Yeah, when Hitler took over. So we came really close, and it seems like they're really trying. Right now, there's a lot of state legislatures around the country that are installing or trying to install secretaries of state who will overturn... an election. If you remember the famous phone call, Trump called the Secretary of State in Georgia and said, we just need 11,700 votes. He's basically saying, it's very mafia-like. He's like, I just need you to make five guys disappear. That's it. I need you to make 11,000 votes appear for me. I mean, how do you get away with that? But they have so far. And that's what's crazy. And the fact that people aren't as worked up as me makes me even crazier. Are you worked up as me, Tehran?
I don't think I can ever be. You know, just in general, I'm a very stoic person in general. It's my natural characteristics, but I understand that it's. I think it's a much bigger deal than people. And when I say people, I mean the American people even understand. And it has nothing to do with the politics. I take that always out. I'm simply talking about the principles. It wouldn't have mattered to me if President Obama had done this, or President Bush, or President Clinton. Anyone who had done something to this caliber, there should be some repercussions and accountability, because I'm all about transparency in general.
I 100% agree with you. That's one of my problems, is that I have friends on the right who are not willing to at all, you know, see this. And again, like, you're right. If it were Obama, I don't care who did it. The whole point is democracy is number one. Because we come from a country, Iran, where a revolution did take place. They did have like a Reichstag moment, whether the theater that was the Rex Theater, they say, that was burned. And then basically another instance that might have led to that revolution. And then you end up with a religious dictatorship. So we ended up with a right-wing dictatorship. And I have news for you, Tehran. Once they succeed on the next time around, you know, I'm famously criticized their leader. So, and you and me, we work together. So I'll see you in the internment camp.
I'm going down.
We'll put on some comedy for the folks. Anyway, guys, with that said, I hope everyone has a great 22, and I'm looking forward to seeing you guys live. I know that the Omicron variant is going on right now. We're keeping an eye on upcoming shows, what shows are happening, what shows aren't happening. I know some of the shows in Canada are going to have to be postponed, so stay tuned. You can go to mazjobrani.com for all the dates. Tehran and I are on tour together. Tehran, how do people find you?
Storming the Capitol on January 6th for the one-year revolution.
Yes.
At I am Tehran all across the board on social media.
At I am Tehran. And he gets into arguments with people with two followers, so it's very entertaining. Follow him on Twitter and watch him argue with
I love it. I'm so petty. They think that I have all the time in the world. I love it.
All the time. And I'm at Maz Jobrani. Write me. Let me know what you think of the show. Tell your friends about the show. Now we're going to go and talk about January 6th and check it out. It's an interesting conversation. And please tell your friends about it. Make sure people know democracy almost died. Let's go talk to Arya Kavler on Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Back to school. Yeah.
Arya Kavler, thank you for joining us on Back to School with Maz Jobrani. And Happy New Year, sir.
Happy New Year.
So as the listeners and viewers of this show know, we always start with a question from my son. I told him about the tweet that you had before January 6th saying January 6th was going to happen and be violent. And he said, I have a question for Mr. Kavler. Here we go.
Hi, Mr. Kavler. I have a question for you. What were some signs that made you so sure that the January 6th attacks were going to happen?
It's a good question. So I think the place to start is to go back to at least to the middle of 2020. You know what? Let's go back to 2015. Right?
I like that.
Let's go back to 2015. And there's rumors that Donald Trump is going to run for president. More than rumors, he's saying he's going to run. He's this kind of outside candidate building his campaign. And around him, there builds up on the chans, places like 4chan, 8chan, these kind of internet subculture places, a bit of a kind of ironic, almost like a joke cult of personality around it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to describe unless you know these spaces, but who are full of people who always are playing roles, everything's a joke, they want to try and be funny and edgy and come up with the first memes. These places are also kind of, you know, cesspools of racism, homophobia, sexism, and everything else. No rules, really, apart from you can't break the law. And even if you do, you might get away with it. So they put up this kind of cult of personality around Donald Trump, humorously and ironically. He's our great leader. He's going to lead this country back to greatness, you know, almost mocking, because, you know, he's this kind of old fat guy who seems to not know what's going on. They kind of role played as if he is the great leader, the genius, the 5D chess player who can outwit everybody. And gradually, when people start to play a role enough, people begin to believe it. I don't know if it's the same people who believe it or if new people come and they don't realize it's a joke and it just becomes. But either way, you ended up with this kind of very hard core of Trump supporters who really believe that the guy is this mega genius who's got everything planned out. Everything is under control. And we saw it once he was president, you know, the guy starts a tweet and says, despite the negative media coverage or press coverage, he gets distracted in the middle. He puts send, right? He sends the word covfefe, right? It's pretty clear what he was trying to say, what happened. You know, there's no mystery here. But his biggest supporters, people that happen to know it, was secretly an Arabic message for the bombings on something in Afghanistan. I don't know why Arabic for Afghanistan, but whatever. And, you know, it's a secret message. And, you know, you just have to understand the message. And so this kind of builds up around it. Its most extreme form becomes the movement that you might have heard of known as QAnon, where people say, actually, Donald Trump is part of a secret plan run by the military to arrest thousands of bad people in the government, you know, child killing, cannibal, paedophile, deep state. And actually, maybe he's already arrested them and they're in prison already. And they're just, you know, body doubles out there. You know, because, you know, obviously he's a genius and everything has a plan. So it comes to 2020, the guy's losing. All the polls say he's losing. So how can that be? Well, obviously he isn't really losing. Donald Trump goes around saying, I'm not losing. The polls are all fake. I'm going to win 40 states. It's going to be a white power victory. I'm never going to see anything like it. I'm winning California. I'm winning New York. And people who believe him because he wouldn't lie. Donald Trump tells the truth. Everybody else lies. The media lies. The polls are lying. The Democrats are lying. The whatever. But, you know, if he says it, it must be true. Comes election day and he loses. Takes a couple of days for everyone to work it out. So the people around him, these really hardcore MAGA fans, they say, well, clearly Donald Trump says there was fraud in the election and the Democrats stole the election. But we know the Democrats couldn't really have stolen the election because Donald Trump's too smart for them. So there must be a plan. You wait and see, the audits are going to show that there was massive fraud and then we're going to be able to throw the wood in jail. Audits and recaps. Okay, so it's not the audits and recaps, but the lawsuits are going to prove it. And the lawsuits, okay, but it's fine because he lost them on purpose. We get to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court isn't interested and throws it out too. And okay, but now you just wait and see what happens. States are going to decertify. And that doesn't happen. Okay, the last possible day that we can cling on to this fantasy is January the 6th, because that's the day that Congress meets in joint session to open the envelopes of the Electoral College, count the votes, and declare the winner. It's a stupid system. It's a crazy system. It makes no sense. It dates back to, like, you know, the time when states, there was no telephone, and states would have to send their results on horseback. And, you know, I guess in theory, someone could, like, kill the horseman and put their own vote in, you know, if you were clever enough in, like, 1870 or whatever. It's later than that, 1880. And so the system is like designed for a world that doesn't exist anymore, where like you couldn't just phone in the results and Congress would have to check. And maybe there would be two very convincing looking horsemen who say, I come from the distant state of California and I have brought the real results. And you wouldn't necessarily know which one was which and you couldn't call them because there was no telephone. And so you had to have some ways to figure it out. So, you know, it's a bizarre system, but it's the system America has right now for like opening the votes and finding out who won, despite the fact the Electoral College voted, you know, nearly a month earlier. Okay, so then Donald Trump sends a tweet and says, come to DC on January the 6th, it will be wild. And that's when it all fell into place for me, because these guys are gonna come and they're gonna see what's happening and they're gonna see that they're not winning. That January the 6th is not going to be a great victory for them. But in fact, it's going to be a big disappointment. That everything that they thought was true isn't true, and everything that was in the media was true all along. And that was only going to end one way, really. It was only going to end in violence and anger being taken out on the people who were proving them wrong at the Capitol.
So many questions come up when you go through that. First of all, my first question is, so do you know what COFEFE was supposed to mean? What was it supposed to mean?
It was just the word coverage. Despite the negative press coverage, I am awesome. Or whatever. I don't know. If you read it in context, it's very clear. They just got distracted, push send, you know?
Well, thank you. That answers a big question I've had for 4 years. Second question I have for you is, what was the exact tweet that you wrote and when did you write it?
The exact tweet that I wrote.
There was a tweet that everyone's that people say you were one of the people who predicted it, right? So what was that?
So the first thing I wrote was actually just a few hours after. It was a little bit later because it was the Sabbath here on the 19th. I said, Donald Trump is calling for this protest. I think, and I had a little thread saying, I think they might storm the Capitol.
This was the 19th of December, right? 2020.
19th of December, 2020. Yeah, yeah. 18th night, yeah. And it didn't really, maybe it was the 18th even. And it didn't really get picked up much at the time. And so then I have a couple of days, I was just kind of saying regularly, guys, this is going to happen. And I wasn't really getting much pickup. People weren't that interested. So then I on the 21st,
People are following, 21st of 2020, this is before the January 6th attacks, you're following this and you're going, okay, this buildup to where we've come to, and then he says, come there on January 6th, it's going to be wild. Yeah. You see that there's going to be violence there.
Yeah. So I tried to do a thread that would convince people that this was a real thing. And I tried to lay it all out. Why, the pieces. And so I wrote, my first tweet in the thread was, on the 6th of January, armed Trumpist militias are going to be rallying in D.C. at Trump's orders. It's highly likely that they'll try to storm the Capitol after it certifies Joe Biden's win. I don't think this has sunk in yet. And then I went through and explained, these people, they're angry at the Democrats, they're angry at the Republicans for not suspending democracy yet, they hate the media, and many of them even consider the police to be the enemy, even though they're flying these Blue Lives Matter flags, which they had at that point, those flags with the blue line. And I tried to explain that. I thought this was going to happen in this thread at the time. Looking at what happened in June, July in DC around the George Floyd protests and seeing how they were policed and just sort of thinking it through.
So it's interesting. I just watched Adam McKay's Don't Look Up, which for people who haven't watched it, the theme is there's a meteor coming to Earth. It's a great movie. And some scientists discover this meteor. And then they go to the White House and they try to tell them there's a meteor coming that's going to destroy civilization in 6 months. And of course, the White House ignores it for other reasons. Then the public starts to try to... Then they come back and they start to listen to the scientists, but then there's debates. And it's actually great because there's part of the... half the country saying, oh, this is just made up, it's not real, live your lives. The other half is, it's very an allegory of climate change, coronavirus, even what you're talking about, which to this day blows my mind that I have friends that are Republican, and I don't know any militiamen Republicans. They tend to be fiscal Republicans and maybe socially conservative. But when I bring up to them, what's that? Yeah, dying breed. Exactly. When I bring up to them, I go, listen, your party now has these crazies that want to take guns and go overthrow the government. They find ways to brush it off. They either say, well, what about the Black Lives Matter protesters? Or they'll say, they'll do the Ted Cruz version, which is, well, the Democrats did steal the election by making elections more, making it easier to vote because it was a pandemic. And so you could do in mail-in ballots, and that's how they stole it. So all of this to say, what's happened in your opinion? What's happened to normal thinking people that don't see this could be the downfall of America as is? I mean, if these guys were to storm the Capitol or do something like this again, It could be the end of democracy as we know it. And as General Milley said, it could be a Reichstag moment.
Look, I don't think anyone needs to storm the Capitol, okay? For that to happen, unfortunately. Fortunately or unfortunately, I don't know. The thing that blows my mind is that on the night of January the 6th, despite everything, Congress came back at night and it's continued the process of certifying the election. They said, we're not going to wait another day. We're not going to wait 2 days. We're not going to let the risk of illegitimacy, you know, you didn't do it on the day. No, we're going to let this linger. We're going to do it now. And they came back and they came to certify the results. And despite everything that happened, there were still Republican objections. They still had to go and separate. And when the crunch came, most of the Republicans in the House, the majority, voted to overturn the election result. The night of January the 6th, after everything had happened, most of them voted to overturn the election result. The Senate was a bit different. But that's what the House Republican caucus looks like now. And it's not going to look any better in 2022. It's going to look a lot worse. You know, we're seeing a bunch of QAnon candidates who are viable, viable elections.
All right. In my, just to put it in perspective, the House, knowing that it wouldn't actually affect the Senate role, didn't they just basically cater to their constituents, which is what the political system currently is designed to do, where they basically catered to their specific demographic and said, oh, we think that it was, we need to overturn, and then knowing that the House was going to substantiate it and keep it moving.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point. And I've been involved in politics for a while at different levels. And actually the hardest votes to campaign on are the symbolic ones. Because it's very hard to get people to vote the right way on a vote that doesn't matter. Because they're like, fine, it's a bad outcome, but it doesn't make any difference. I might as well vote the way people want me to vote, or my people want me to vote. So you have a point. I think that's a fair point to make. But I guess their calculation was that on the night of January the 6th, after everything that happened, their constituents would still want them to vote to overturn the election. Right? So you just pushes the problem back one, maybe. I don't know. And it's not so even so straightforward. One of the stories that we heard from one of the more moderate Republicans was that one of his colleagues told him that night that he had to vote that way because he was scared after everything he saw. He didn't think the election was fraudulent. He didn't want to vote to overturn it. But after having, run for his life, he decided that was the safest option.
It's so crazy because we can't even agree. Because, I would guess, and I don't know the statistics, maybe you do, that the armed militia or the violent extremists in any party are a minority, I would guess, numbers-wise.
Oh, yeah.
And yet they have been able to hijack the agenda and also the loyalty of the others in their party. You would think that as a country, we would all be able to say, whether I'm pro-abortion, anti-abortion, pro-gun, anti-gun, I can agree that a peaceful transfer of power is something that we rely on. I can agree that free and fair elections is something we should rely on. And yet we're seeing more and more the right is really trying to make it even less democratic with all the laws they've passed, the anti-voting laws, with all the people they're putting in. Like you just said, they've really been trying to get into Secretary of State positions, people who would overturn the election if it were to happen again. I mean, it blows my mind when I hear some of these people talk and claim that there was fraud. Go ahead.
I think there was a moment in January, February of 2020, where 2021, pardon, but after everything that happened, where some of the senior Republicans thought that, we don't want this to be the way our party goes, kind of Mitch McConnell's of this world. And look, honestly, a lot of these people, the kind of angry militia type, they're not really Republicans either, right? They don't necessarily, a lot of them might register independents. They might consider all politicians are corrupt. We like Donald Trump because he wasn't really a Republican either. And there was a moment where it looked like, in fact, even before Joe Biden was inaugurated, but it looked like Trump might go off and set up his own political party. I don't know if you remember. It was the Patriot Party, the Patriots. It was going to have be a lion animal. And it was going to basically be, I think it's fair to say that from the way people were talking about it, it would have been kind of a nakedly fascist party. And ultimately, that in America, it's a two-party system. That would have been absolutely fatal to Republicans. Absolutely fatal to Republicans. 10%, 15% of their base walk off, and it might be more. Then they just can't win elections anymore. So I think there's a lot of effort, a lot of freak out about people who are at the top of the Republican Party. Like, look, we don't want these people. And we maybe acknowledge that if we're not careful, they're going to take over our party. But we also don't have any other option, because if we kick them out, then we're screwed. So I think that the accommodation has happened. And now it's happened. It's happening faster. You know, moderate Republicans at all levels are becoming a rare thing. The House is becoming more and more extreme. Senators are a bit safer. But, you know, Trump is still powerful in his party and is running a campaign against Mitch McConnell and you know, the handful of moderate senators that remain. And like, I don't know what the Republican Party is going to look like in 2-4 years' time. It's a real problem. In a two-party system, if one of the two parties goes crazy, what do you do?
It's a political calculation, as you said. And my question to you on that is, what happens when you start getting like the Lincoln Project type of Republicans or other Republicans, like you said, who are fed up finally, and they go, I can't. Because right now, for example, even the January 6th commission, when they tried to set up a bipartisan commission, as you know, the Republicans said, no, we don't want to do this, because they use the term of like, you know, oh, this is going to be a biased thing. But the truth is, we all know that the Republicans just don't want to relive January 6th. They want to ignore January 6th. They want to call it a tourist visit. They want to do whatever they can to have their constituents feel good about that day and not realize that it was an insurrection and a failed coup attempt for a fascist state, by the way. So what happens? Do you see in the future more, you know, just Republicans that are a little more grounded peeling off, and regardless of what the Republican establishment had wanted, do you see them losing their power regardless? Are more people going to peel off, or are more people going to get hardened and go further to the Marjorie Taylor Greene side?
At the moment, I think we're seeing both this phenomenon. We're seeing moderate Republicans leave the party, and we're seeing, you know, more extreme people who maybe might have voted Republican, but never been involved in Republican politics before, becoming, you know, instead of being crazy conspiracy theorists for the blog, they're becoming members of Congress. You know, look, Lauren Boebert, a QAnoner who got famous by insulting Beto, right? You know, Beto during his government campaign. And now she's a member of Congress. The Let's Go Brandon guy, you know, from Christmas Eve, he's going to run for Congress, it looks like. Maybe they'll give him some of a win.
It's crazy. And, you know, just to explain that real quickly, so people that don't know, the Joe Biden was taking calls with Jill Biden, and they were, you know, saying Merry Christmas to people. And this one guy got in, and I think he was in Colorado, if I'm not mistaken. He got on the call, and he's talking about his kids, and Biden's being very nice, and they're being very cordial. And at the very end, the guy throws out a Let's Go Brandon, which comes from a race that happened where people were chanting.
A NASCAR race.
NASCAR race. Where people were chanting at the end. The winner was Brandon, whatever his last name is. And people were saying, fuck Biden. And the announcer at the race, the TV announcer, goes, oh, look, they're saying Let's Go Brandon, because he was trying to clean it up. So that's become this call now for right wing, you know, people on the right, when they want to insult Joe Biden, they go, Let's Go Brandon. So this idiot, after a cordial conversation and a polite conversation with Joe and Jill Biden, and he's there with kids, got four kids or something, he's a father, and he throws in a Let's Go Brandon at the end, which is an insult. It's like saying fuck Biden to Biden. And now a lot of people got upset at him, but as you just indicated, the right has turned around and said, you should run for some political position, just like they probably want Kyle Rittenhouse to run for something, the guy who shot those people in Kenosha.
Kyle Rittenhouse is a complicated one because he said that the election wasn't a fraud. And he said he has some sympathy with some, with despite everything he did. And that freaked out some people. It kind of led to this massive internecine war inside the nuttiest parts of the kind of MAGA QAnon world because he said the election wasn't rigged. If he says the election wasn't rigged, that means he must be really one of them. Right?
So, it's nutty. So he's not
extreme enough.
Do you spend time on these 8chans and all these things? Is that where you're also reading some of this stuff? Because, I mean, I saw the whole...
Way to try to get him arrested, Maz.
As an analyst. No, because I watched the QAnon documentary on HBO, which I highly recommend everybody should watch. And it's exactly what you just said. The people that are on these 8chans and 4chans, I know there's freedom of speech, but... what is going on? I mean, is this mental illness? Like, how do we solve this problem, Aria? How do we get out of this place?
So I do watch. Look, these days, most of the kind of QAnon world is living on Telegram, the Telegram app, which is largely uncensored, and they can have, you know, followings. Some of these people have 500,000 followers, you know, or more. And over on the chans, you know, it's real anarchy. And I do keep an eye on it. I don't live there enough, you know, to really understand what's going on any given day. But I do keep an eye on it. I don't know what the answer is. On the one hand, deplatforming from places like Twitter and Facebook has made a big difference to some of these movements. You know, ultimately they were allowed to kind of spread, partly because Twitter, Facebook, essentially were scared of the Trump administration. They didn't want to cross them. One notable exception actually is Reddit, which was willing to kick off both QAnon and ultimately the biggest pro-Trump forum, the Donald, was like eventually removed from Reddit, and, you know, while Trump was still president, which was a big deal, right? But I don't think deplatforming is the only answer. I don't have an easy answer to that one. I don't have an easy answer to that one. There has to be will to de-radicalize. And we're talking about enormous number, you know, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions. And they're all in the US. You know, these movements, the kind of Trumpist movement is surprisingly international. There's like, you know, hardcore Japanese Trumpers.
Wow. There was that Korean guy who gave him a 10th degree black belt or so, honorary 10th degree black belt. I don't know if you saw that. It was a joke.
Yeah, there's like various cults that love him, you know.
Sticking with January 6th, you know, I read that article that you reference in your most recent article, which is just to explain the Reichstag moment. I didn't really understand what Reichstag moment was until I kind of went back and reviewed it again. And basically, for just the basics of it is, so you have the Weimar Republic, who's the, you know, leading Germany, and someone sets fire to the Reichstag, which is basically their parliament, and it's a Dutch guy, and then the Nazis with Hitler declare that as an attack, and they call it a state of emergency, and they take over the country, and now they rule like that, and then obviously their power grows and grows and grows. And so when General Milley says that this was going to be Trump's Reichstag moment, I had never heard of this explanation of why the military didn't show up. So basically, this article says most people think that the military didn't come fast because either A, there was it's just a slow process, it's bureaucratic, it takes time to get the orders to get the National Guard in there to clear that building. B, Trump was slowing it down and saying, don't go, don't go, don't go. Or C, and they posited the third idea, which was the generals, the military didn't want the military to go because they're afraid the military would show up to squash these Trump supporters that are attacking the Capitol. And then Trump would declare a state of emergency and military law and put us into the Insurrection Act. I'm not sure, maybe you can explain the difference between the Insurrection Act and martial law. And basically use the military to stop the counting of the votes and say, we need to stop right now. And then now he's running the military and he's got like a military dictatorship going, correct?
Yeah, something a bit like that. Yeah. So the Insurrection Act basically allows, in certain circumstances, the president to use the military, including the National Guard, which he can federalize, to enforce the law. He can declare, like, you know, that there's an insurrection in a particular area. And normally this is done with the state's permission, you know, like, and there's a lot of rioting and the state wants help. But it can be done without the state's permission. You know, the law was partly passed in case, like, a state was in insurrection against the union. And that was one of the things that a lot of Trump's most hardcore supporters wanted him to do, or thought he already had done. You know, lots of rumors he's already signed it. And, you know, they thought that this was going to be how Trump cleared out his enemies. And, you know, there was talk. Mike Flynn wanted to use the military to basically declare martial law, maybe via the Insurrection Act, and then to rerun the election. Because an election run under gunpoint, and, you know, that Trump had declared would obviously be much freer and fairer than an election where people just got to, you know, vote the first time around. And you know, so there was this real worry in the air, I think, and a lot of people were concerned about it. We know that this was discussed or you know, coming close to being discussed, at least, or hinted at in a meeting that that Flynn and Sidney Powell and some others had in the White House for Trump. Apparently the big row over this happened on January the 18th, actually, and it went on till very, very early in the morning. You know, people came, people went, people swore, there was fights, it was a nasty, nasty meeting. It went back to the residence, and it didn't finish until after midnight. And the interesting thing is, it's a few minutes later that Trump went to Twitter and said, come on January the 6th, it'll be wild. I only kind of put
You said January 18th. You meant December 18th.
December 18th, big pardon. Right, yes, right, December 18th. A few minutes later, Trump went to Twitter and first announced the January 6th rally. I'm not saying these things are connected necessarily, but clearly that there was this kind of worry in the air that the, you know, Trump could do this, particularly in DC, because the DC National Guard, the National Guard reports to the governor of the state. The DC National Guard doesn't, because there's no governor of DC. And the president is the commander in chief of the National Guard of the District of Columbia. So, you know, once they're out and in people's faces, there would have been a worry that, you know, one of these people, like Michael Flynn or Sidney Powell, might pick up the phone to Trump and say, "Hey, I see you have all these guards in place. You know, with just one order, you could do this." I don't think Trump was thinking about it himself, right? But I think that the people in the military realized that there are a lot of people around Trump who are thinking about this and who want him to do it. And if they tell him, look, you have two options. Either you lose or you win, and all you need to do is say the words. Then at some point, he might have decided to just say the words.
Wow. We came so close. We came so close to an insurrection, to a coup d'etat, because I don't also know what would the rest of the country have done. I guess we would have gone into a civil war, because I don't think everybody was just laid down and been like, okay, you got us, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely the case. Look, you know, the Capitol was breached around 2-ish, I think, something like that. And Trump was quiet for a few hours. According to reports, he was sitting watching television, loving it. And we know now from what the January 6th committee released in the last few days, from Mark Meadows' text that he turned over to them before he started cooperating, that people were calling Meadows, who was then White House Chief of Staff, saying, you've got to get Trump to stop this. It's going crazy. It's going to cost him his legacy. Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, and even Trump's son, even Donald Trump Jr., calling the White House Chief of Staff, saying, get him to stop. Get him to tell him to stop. And he did it for some hours. But you've got to figure what might have happened if he'd have done the opposite. If he just sent out one tweet saying, this is the time, rise up and take our country back. Mm. One tweet, 7, 8, 9, 10 words, click, send. Then I think it's possible there would have been something very close to a civil war immediately.
Yeah, you actually mentioned some of that stuff in one of your most recent articles from your newsletter, which you say also what would have happened, because I've thought of this too. What would have happened if the rioters had caught a congressman or a congresswoman or Mitt Romney, who just barely passed, or Mike Pence. Explain that one officer that was able to, you know, save Romney and others.
Yeah. So Officer Eugene Goodman, a name you might have heard, became famous because there was a mob coming towards the Senate, and the Senate doors hadn't closed yet. They were about a minute to 2 minutes behind. And Officer Goodman, a veteran himself, like basically kind of baited the mob. He like pushed a couple of them back, and he seemed to try and be protecting a stairwell and make it seem like the stairwell was important. And then they all chased him up the stairwell. But actually, right behind the stairwell, if they'd have just turned the other way, they could have walked right into the Senate chamber. It was still full of senators. Mike Pence was apparently at that point in an office just next to there. And so he managed to really save the day. Now, later it emerged that just a minute or two before that, he had managed to catch Mitt Romney in the corridor, who was heading towards where the rioters were, and tell him, no, go back. So, you know, in the space of like 2-3 minutes, he averted two enormous tragedies. And like, you know, imagine it wasn't him there. Imagine he had gone to the toilet 5 minutes earlier, right? Then you know, these rioters, they might have captured Romney, they might have stormed the Senate and captured senators instead of when they got into the Senate, you know, and what's this guy, the guy with the horns and all that?
The shaman.
The shaman. They, you know, they were able to, you know, go through his papers and wreck some stuff and make a mess. But if there'd been people in there, it would have been quite a different story.
And also, we got to keep in mind, whoever is, you know, making excuses for any of these people, many of them are unstable, and many of them are militiamen types who've been living for this. Like, in their minds, they're thinking, this is my moment to save my country. So it's not like they would see Mitt Romney and be like, oh, hey, it's okay that you voted to impeach our God, Trump. You let him go. Or they would see, I mean, Nancy Pelosi, forget it. Mike Pence at that point. So as you say, the danger that we came upon, we got so close. And for this all to happen, and from my mind now, this is someone who, you know, I'm not a legal mind, but for them to get that close, and then for the architects, including Donald Trump, who clearly was stating, go down there, take back your country, I'll see you down there. I mean, clearly it's so mind-blowing to watch him say, go do it, and then turn around and go, I didn't do anything. What did I do? I'm not guilty at all. I'm not going to give you any of my paperwork. You know, where is this headed? I mean, do we have a chance of holding people responsible that are high up? What's going to happen?
I think there's a chance. Look, there's two different things going on. There is a Justice Department investigation. We know that like more than 700 of the rioters in that day have been arrested and charged with various different crimes. Some of them, you know, just being on like in the outside the Capitol, but in the part they're not supposed to be, like past the barriers. Some of them for being inside the Capitol, not really doing anything while they were there. Some of them for being much, you know, for trying to disrupt the proceedings, which is carries a really serious jail sentence. And some of them obviously for like violence, vandalism, you know, more extreme things of being armed, more extreme things as well. There haven't yet been any charges for any of the like more people on the more planning side. Although things seem to be heading in that direction, maybe. It's still a bit unclear exactly what the Justice Department might be doing behind the scenes. But at the same time, you have the parallel track of the January 6th Select Committee in the House of Representatives, which is doing its own investigation. It is kind of trying to build a case. It's pretty clear that Trump and maybe the planners of the rally were like, you know, corruptly trying to make this happen, essentially. And it's a complicated situation. It's very hard for the Justice Department to investigate Trump or any of these big guys. And they could start, but it might take them years and years and years. The January 6th Commission is much better placed to, like, you know, issue subpoenas, maybe get responses. They don't need probable cause. They can just do what they want to some degree. So whether there's some cooperation there behind the scenes, it's a bit unclear. I think people are investigating. I don't have a great deal of confidence that like Trump or the people immediately around him are going to be found criminally accountable for January 6th. I think they are going to be investigated, or they are being investigated. But it's hard, you know, like the line between, you know, especially in America with America, with First Amendment, you know, incitement, freedom of speech. He didn't say specifically to do that, but he did say to do this. At the same time, in sometimes that is okay, you know, like kind of organized crime, for example. It's pretty common that, like, you don't have to specifically say the words. We saw it actually in the 2020 impeachment with Ukraine, but Trump didn't have to say the words. It was pretty clear what the quid pro quo was. That's not a different area of law. So personally, I don't have a great deal of confidence that Trump or the people immediately around him are going to be found criminally accountable for January 6th. There might be others who are a bit higher up in the planning tree who are, from what we've seen so far. But I would like to be pleasantly surprised and like to be wrong about that.
And what about their, I heard the January 6th Commission is planning on televising some of the hearings. Are we going to change some minds? Are people going to open their eyes and go, oh my God, this guy is a big charlatan? Are more people going to realize what a shyster Trump is? You know, you had famously the lawyer of the shaman who got 4+ years, who's clearly out of his mind. I mean, he also has mental health problems. And that lawyer held a press conference after his client, the horned shaman, got sentenced. And he basically said something along the lines of, you know, no disrespect to Donald Trump, I still like him, or something like that. And he went on and goes, but you need to fix this fucking shit. Like, you put this in these crazy people's minds and they all thought they were fighting for you. And your lie, his big lie of the election was stolen, has caused a lot of harm and damage to people. I was just listening to the, there's one podcast called American Radical. Ayman over at MSNBC did, of this girl who was basically, had become a QAnon believer, ends up at the protests, ends up on the front lines, and is either trampled or the government saying overdosed, and we don't know, you know, how it exactly happened. But ultimately, she wouldn't have died if that mob had not tried to attack the Capitol. Similar to the Ashley Babbitt situation. Ashley Babbitt, for people who, you know, now she's become this right-wing hero martyr, and the left is saying, no, she was trying to go into what would have been the house. And that is, you know, if she had been able to get through that window and others would have started coming in, there's Congress people on the other side. So that guy who shot, you could argue, make an argument that he protected all those Congress people. He didn't know who she was. He didn't know what she had. So he shoots, right? So all of this to say that there's people who have hardened their positions when they're faced with the reality, but I'm seeing a few people who have changed their positions. Are you at all optimistic that putting these hearings in the public's eyes will change some hearts and minds?
Look, it might. Look, there's clearly a bit of politics here. You know, the January 6th Commission is thinking about the midterms. Thinking about trying to tell a story that will be maybe helpful to the Democrats going into the midterms. And that's, you know, that's politics. We have, how many Benghazi hearings did we have, you know, with Clinton? So it kind of depends what they have to show, what they're going to hear from people, what kind of testimony they're going to get. But I kind of suspect that as time goes on, the people whose minds have changed, who can be changed, mostly already have been. And the people are from this point on only going to get hardened more in their position. And when someone like this lawyer stands up and says, Donald Trump, you've got to do something. One thing he didn't do, but there was a lot of pressure on him for some of his allies to do before he left office on January 20th. But it's going to be an issue in the 2024 election. It's going to be an issue. Is pardoning them all?
Pardoning, Pard- Pardoning who? Oh, I see.
The Chinese, planning part of a lot of them. Trump didn't do it because he didn't really care about them. You know, he didn't feel like he needed to harm his relationship. You know, so around 700 people, 1,000 people are going to go to prison. What do I care, right? A lot of them are going to go to prison, but, you know, a lot of them will, right? But it's going to be an issue for whoever the Republican nominee is, and it's probably going to be Donald Trump, right? Going into 2024, is he going to pardon these people? Is he just going to get everybody off? Because ultimately, all of these people who are going to face responsibility are facing federal exposure. And the next Republican president, whether it's Trump or DeSantis or whoever else, or Trump Jr., right, can pardon them. So you know, that's in the background too.
Wow. Tehran, what questions do you have? Any questions for Arya?
Well, a question that I have is actually geared to all this blame is placed on the right. What blame actually shifts to the left? Because it takes two to tango in a lot of terms. And when we look at the right, we're always saying, well, look at this and look at this, but we're forgetting that it's not like the left is perfect either. So what did the left do or not do in this particular situation?
It's an interesting question. This is zooming out maybe a bit too far. You could say, I think perhaps fairly, that there were elements of the mainstream left, and Joe Biden was never one of them, but there were elements of the mainstream left that were a bit too comfortable with some of the violence around the Black Lives Matter protests in the summer. They weren't able to maybe clearly enough articulate that protest is good and valuable and important, but, you know, setting fire to shops is bad. Right. And look, you know, some people setting fire to shops were just like opportunistic looters who were like, hey, there's a protest on, we can go and rob a shop. Great. You know, and they would give a crap about any cause. But, you know, and that created maybe a context around which like parts of the establishment viewed political violence as, or particularly like rioting type political violence, as like a left wing problem. Of course, that's also the establishment's fault for not seeing what's in front of their faces, that what was going to happen on January 6th. So there's a limit to how much you can blame for that. And also that would be ignoring, frankly, a lot of the right-wing political violence we saw in 2020 around like COVID stuff, you know, militias invading state capitals was like pretty common in 2020. Yeah, January the 6th was like just the last in a series of those kinds of things. A lot more violent, a lot more people. You could also maybe say that the mainstream left, I think this is actually more criticism now rather than then, that like the left, in all its shapes, from like, you know, the kind of moderate mainstream Joe Biden left through to like, you know, the more progressive left, more extreme and the more hardcore left, has been, for good reasons, maybe, prioritized like immediate policy gains around like COVID and infrastructure and whatever and Build Back Better, which isn't a gain yet, and spent all their political capital on those things and has not really been willing collectively to devote any political capital in like dealing with the problem. The voting rights stuff, but that's only one small part of this picture. Actually, reforming the Electoral Count Act is a pretty big piece of it too. Yeah, like thinking about some kind of structural reforms that are needed to like basically prevent the presidency being as powerful as it is in the future, because we've seen that a powerful presidency can be used to really bad effects. It took Trump a couple of years to get the hang of it. So the first couple of years Trump was president, he was really bad at using the power of the presidency. By the end, he got quite good at it. If he comes back in 2024, and Congress still hasn't decided to trim the powers of the presidency anymore, then they're pretty screwed. America's pretty screwed. And there was a lot of talk about this. Maybe prosecutions shouldn't be run by political appointees in America, but they should be run by an independent prosecution service a bit more. You know, there's more ways you can get to separations of powers issues. There's things you can do. Maybe you can beef up the roles of inspectors general. But no, this is not a part of the major discourse of the left, which was, oh crap, we just saw that actually electing a guy dictator for 4 years, that could be bad. Right? They're like, oh, no, we want Joe Biden to do more left-wing dictator things. Why isn't he forgiving more debt? You know? And that I think is like a big problem, because we just saw how badly this can go. And everyone's thinking, okay, let's do the best we can for the next couple of years before the next guy burns it all down, rather than thinking, how do we stop it from burning down?
You know, it's interesting you say that, because it feels like technology, cars, phones, every year we can upgrade and keep up. Mm-hmm. Feels like some of these laws are so outdated. I mean, you started by talking about this counting of the electoral ballots in on January 6th and how outdated it is, because back in the day, the guy would ride on his horse. Now you got a phone, you just pick up the phone or you do a Zoom or whatever and you're done. Similar to the electoral college itself. I mean, it looks like, you know, many, many states with many, many fewer people have a lot more say per capita than a lot of other people in, let's say, California, New York, et cetera. So, I mean, even that, I think, needs an overhaul so that we become more democratic, not with a big D, but democracy as in each vote counts. So you do make some good points. You make some good points about that.
I do have one more question,
actually. Go ahead, T. Go.
So what are the implications of January 6th, not just on a national level, which people seem to have forgotten it, but on the international playing field where people looked at America as basically the leader of democracy? What are the implications and how does it get perceived politically, socio-politically, and of course, in a global level?
I think, you know, there was a sense internationally that, like, you know, America had taken leave of its senses under Trump. You know, countries didn't know that they could rely on America's word, because maybe the next guy would say something nicer on the phone to Trump and then he'd screw over the deal he just made. So the kind of return of America, not completely, actually, some stuff is gone, not coming back. But the return of like American leadership to like a large part of the democratic world is like certainly a stabilizing influence. And look, January the 6th was like, you know, a lot of countries have had things, even democracies have had similar incidents in their past one way or another. So I don't think that the day itself, the what took place, you know, at least the riot, I don't think the riot on January the 6th like fundamentally changed like international views of America. I think, you know, certainly amongst maybe opinion elites, what happened afterwards, again, the willingness or the potential idea that maybe in the future Congress is going to decide who the winner is, and like there's the like idea that there's some kind of legitimacy to that process. They're like, you know, people go and vote, right? But ultimately, if Congress decides that there's one state they want to throw out the votes for, then they will. I think that sense of like, you know, maybe we can't rely on America in the longer term because this is one path, the electoral count process is one path by which, you know, maybe in the next election, the one after, by which America will stop being a democracy. If indeed you can call it a democracy, as Maz said, when like, you know, in very many levels of American government, the minority rules and the majority does not, right?
Listen, Arya, this is all interesting. I could talk about January 6th forever. I keep reading about it. I keep watching it. And I'm so happy you joined us. Now, before we let you go, we're going to do a speed round. This is called Back to School with Arya Kovler. Five quick questions, five quick answers. Were you popular in high school?
Not really.
Okay, that's good. What did you want to be in high school?
Maybe a lawyer, maybe a scientist.
Okay. What would you tell your high school self if you could tell yourself one thing?
It gets better.
Oh, good. That's what everybody says. What other profession would you do if you could?
Ooh. Astronaut.
I like that. And would you recommend people get into your profession and why?
No, not really. I'm not sure that I have a profession, and I just do like a bunch of stuff that I find interesting. Oh, I guess that actually sounds good. Yeah, do what I do. Do a bunch of stuff you find interesting.
I love that. That's a great answer. Do stuff that you find interesting. Tehran, what did you learn on this episode?
That we're not going to last. We're not going to make it, bro. This is the end. This is the beginning of the end. It's literally the beginning of the end. Okay? Good luck.
I learned that people just don't listen. I mean, everyone's got to watch this Don't Look Up, because it is perfect. It's a perfect a metaphor for what Arya is talking about, with also all the stuff that you saw early on, Arya, coming down the pipeline, and people are like, no, it's going to be fine. And then, of course, here we are. And democracy is about to be crumbled, is going to crumble. With that said, I want people to check you out on Twitter. It's at Arya Kovler, AriehKovler. And the newsletter is called The Hat Tip. I want people to check that out. Anything else you want to plug, Arya?
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
Thank you for joining us. We really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you for being on Back to School with Maja Brani.
Back to school. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Back to School with Maz Jobrani. We hope you're enjoying it. We hope you're having fun, and we hope you're learning something. So make sure to let your friends know, share it on iTunes, share the clips from YouTube. Just get it out there. However you're listening, let your friends know to tune in to Back to School with Maz Jobrani.
Back to school.